What's going on, everybody? It is that time again. The Sooners Illustrated Podcast, episode 256 on this Monday, March 16th, 2026. Josh Callaway, Tom Green with you on a Monday. Selection Sunday has come and gone. Oklahoma, once again, the first team out. We will react to it. The week that was in Nashville, they come up just short. The decision has been made on Porter Moser. We'll discuss it all on the program, of course, today. Women's Hoops also gets their bracket. We're wrapping up the Spring Primer Series. We'll do a little Diamond Sports on the back end. A packed Monday show we've got for you right here on Sooners Illustrated. Reminder, though, before we start, subscribe to Sooners Illustrated at oklahoma.247sports.com. Use the promo code SoonersPod60, all one word, for listening on podcasts. That'll get you 60% off a VIP membership for a year to Sooners Illustrated, the entire 247 Sports Network. Make sure to take advantage of it. Spring Bowl's right around the corner, about to start, all that good stuff. Diamond Sports are off and running, so jump in with us every single day as Sooners Illustrated. All right, let's get into it. Tom, we're going to lead with hoops. Selection Sunday was yesterday. Big day, one of the great American days that there is. But a painful day for Oklahoma. Again, the bracket comes out. Oklahoma, the first team out of the field. This comes after, you know, you and I did the show on Friday, and if, you know, that was after they had beaten Texas A&M. And we were in agreement, right, that they might get in. It's a coin flip, probably slightly lean toward not if they could not beat Arkansas on Friday. And they're right in it with Arkansas, but they lose. Darius Acuff is insane. Arkansas goes on to win the SEC tournament. And Oklahoma, once again, for the second time in 3 years and the third time in five under Porter Moser, have been in the first four out. They've been now the first team out literally twice in 3 years. Painful, very painful. Your reaction to all of it, we'll get into the Porter Moser part of it as well, obviously, in a minute, but just unreal. And you just, yeah, you think of the losing streak, all the games that they could have won, just one of those going the other way might have been the difference. It's kind of unbelievable that we're in this spot again with Oklahoma.
Yeah, like you said, you know, going into, you know, Friday's game, we kind of thought it was a coin flip if they had lost to Arkansas. You know, we got a better idea on Saturday. Really, it felt like when Dayton upset Miami, Ohio, that probably pushed that cost Oklahoma spot, because that made the A-10 a, you know, two bid league at that point. And you know, I think VCU, which won that tournament, wound up being technically like the last team in, like ahead of some of the at large bids. Or behind some of the at-large bids in that sense. So you'd have to think that if Miami, Ohio had gone on to, you know, handle business in the A-10 tournament,
MAC, Oklahoma might have been. You mixed up here, mate. You're thinking St. Louis. Sorry. Miami, Ohio's in the MAC.
Yeah, MAC.
They lost to, was it UMass? Yeah, all right, you crossed. It's just, the point stands. Just get helping.
Yeah, sorry. I got them crossed up there. But either way.
The point stands, yeah.
Yeah. That upset, you know, probably cost.
Yeah, it did. I mean, it did. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh no, my bad. It was not the Miami Heat. I was thinking of St. Louis.
Well, they St. both Louis. Did. They both yeah, did. No, but, the same thing. Yeah, but, I mean, both ways. Yeah. If St. Louis wins the A-10, or certainly though, if Miami, Ohio, I mean, because you could maybe argue VCU gets in either way. Maybe they were right on the bubble, but. To your point, if Miami, Ohio wins the MAC, the MAC's a one-bid league, and that's it. And when you're the first team out, you can literally point to any little thing. So your point is correct in that if Miami, Ohio wins the MAC tournament, they're the one team. Oklahoma's the last team in, theoretically, right? But they don't, and so another MAC team gets in, their MAC champ, and then Miami, Ohio takes an at-large bid.
Yeah, but look, Miami, Ohio was going to get in regardless. But we were texting on Saturday after Dayton upset St. Louis in that crazy finish. That's the game I was thinking of. So because of that, you know, the A-10 wound up being a two-bid league, and you'd think that, you know, we kind of joked, it's like Dayton probably cost Oklahoma a trip to Dayton.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So that like Saturday became, you know, pretty clear that it was probably not going to break in their favor. And it's unfortunate for them. Like you said, second time in 3 years that they are the first team out of the field. You know, 2 years ago, the feeling had to be so much worse for them because there was just like an absurd number of bid steals that year. I think it was five bid stealers that just like pushed them down the line.
Crazy.
Whereas this time around, like they have no one to blame but themselves for that 9-game losing streak. Like, they did everything in their power to battle back for them. And I commend them for that, because, you know, like you said, at the start of February, we, you know, thought this season was over. We thought Porter Moser's tenure was going to be over, and they managed to go 8-3 down the stretch. Played a really competitive game against Arkansas on Friday night. They led for much of it, but I mean, Darius Acuff was just insane. And then Trevon Brazil just did a really great job on the offensive glass in the second half. So that was certainly tough for them to kind of have their run end like that, especially the way the rest of the weekend kind of broke. It's like Ole Miss advances in the semifinals, and that's who they would have faced on Saturday. It's like, okay, that's a team that, as good as Ole Miss had been playing in the SEC tournament, Oklahoma knew that they could beat them. And then Vanderbilt in the finals, after they took it to Florida, and again, as good as Vanderbilt has played down the stretch, Oklahoma has the confidence that they could beat them, because that's who they halted that losing streak against. It's a tough break for them, but again, no one to blame but themselves for being the, you know, first team out this time around.
Yeah, no, I agree. It's painful for an entirely different reason than 2 years ago, where they thought they were going to be in, and then they, like you said, all the bid steals happened and they're the first team out. This year, I'm sure they probably knew they probably were not going to get in. Now, it's always going to suck to be the first team out, and you're going to hold out hope, but I'm sure they probably knew more than likely we're not going to get it. The painful part is that they're clearly better than this. The way they played down the stretch, you know, right now, the last month, they're metrically, you know, a top 15, top 20 team. And right now, if they could have got in the tournament, I'm not saying they're going to go to, you know, Indianapolis, but there was a genuine belief like this team can do damage in the tournament if they could get in. Yeah. The way they're playing right now, the way the guards are playing, they're healthy, and they just figured it out too late. And the losing streak is going to be what really haunts you, because, like I said before, you just close out the Missouri game. You don't lose in Columbia and in Starkville in the same week. You finish Arkansas or Alabama the first time, like any one of those, and it may have been enough. And when you're the first team out, again, literally one spot, that's when you can point to little tiny things, because that's the difference. That's the margin between being in and being out. Now, could Oklahoma – do I think Oklahoma's a better team than Miami, Ohio? Yeah, I do. I think they would probably beat Miami, Ohio by 10-plus if they played. But Miami, Ohio went undefeated in the regular season. Like, I don't have a problem with that. Same for SMU. Like, it's tough. When you look at the metrics, like SMU strength of schedule, ACC stinks. Like, it gets it's hard, right? I think OU is probably better than some of these teams. But at the end of the day, it's like you said, and I'll say the same thing I kind of said 2 years ago, which is you hate to be first team out. Oklahoma has a legitimate argument to be in. But get off the bubble. Get off the bubble. And this doesn't happen if you just don't have a 9-game skid and you figure it out a little sooner, then you're not on the bubble. And you know, you don't get blasted by a bad Arizona State team who we thought might be decent. They're not, obviously, and back in December. Like, it all matters. It all adds up. And so, yeah, it's definitely it's painful again, but for a different reason, not because you feel like you got left out when you thought you were in, but just because this team clearly – should have been better than what they were. They just figured it out too late, really.
Yeah. And again, like you mentioned it, that Missouri game, I think, is the one that's going to stand out. It's like to have one buzzer beater on you is tough. To have two in the same game is just like backbreaking. But again, like you said, there was belief that if they had made the tournament, they could have made some noise. Like, we don't know what their draw would have been. Obviously, they probably would have been in that first four in Dayton, like where, you know, Texas wound up. Yeah. And certainly Texas kind of tailspin at the end of the season and snuck in there because of this, you know, their wins above bubble, which, you know, the committee really emphasized this year. But you look at what Oklahoma did down the stretch when they went 8-3, you know, I believe five of those wins were against teams that made the tournament. Missouri, Texas A&M, Texas, Georgia, and Vanderbilt.
And then, you know, Auburn was second team out that they beat.
Yeah. And then Auburn, which was, you know, second team out, like you said. That's a strong resume down the stretch. So, like, if you had just, like you said, found a way to win that Missouri game, or, you know, finish off Alabama or Arkansas when you saw them earlier in the season, or either one of the Texas A&M games during the regular season, we're having a completely different conversation about this team. And, you know, they're making the tournament for the second straight year, bouncing back from a really rough December, however it would have shaken out if it's not a 9-game losing streak. But, you know, they're on the outside looking in again. And it's just, it's kind of how it's been these last 5 years, you know, three out of 5 years, you know, being right there on the cut line basically. And then last year you're making it in. You got to find a way to just elevate it just enough.
Yep. And then all things being equal, you still almost certainly make it in if Darius Acuff just isn't insane. If you don't run into a legitimate NBA player in college basketball, because he was unbelievable in that game. They were right in it with a really good Arkansas team that went on to win the tournament, the SEC tournament. And so it's just, it's one of those things. And it felt like fans had kind of jumped back in. The team was playing so well, but they just came up just short by that much. So a painful end. And go ahead. Do you have a final thought on Nashville and kind of the season?
Yeah, I was going to say on the Darius Acuff front, I think you take some solace in the fact that he was just doing that to everybody in Nashville. Like he won the conference tournament MVP. And like you said, Arkansas won the SEC tournament. So it's not like it was just a random like one-off night for him. Like he is a legit dude. He's going to be, you know, probably top five, top seven pick in the draft this summer. It just happened to be that he had his most insane game against Oklahoma. I think he scored or assisted on like 58% of Arkansas's points that night.
All the shots he hit were just dumb.
Yeah, so I think you live with that. I think the bigger issue in that game was just the offensive rebounds in the second half that like Trevon Brazil was getting, because that wound up being the real difference. Because you know, you withstood Darius Acuff's like insane first half, and it's like, okay, if he gets his, but everybody else on Arkansas just doesn't play up to the level that they need, like you can still pull that game out, and they had a chance. But when you're getting out hustled a little bit on the boards in the second half compared to the first half, I think that's where you're really kicking yourself about that game.
No doubt about it. So tough end of the season for Oklahoma. Again, the first team out just outside of the field. That immediately, you know, the season ends. This is before the selection show. The conversation obviously very quickly shifts to what do we think in terms of Porter Moser's future? And you know, we were kind of in agreement. We talked about it on Friday kind of briefly that felt like Porter, that it was more likely that he would just leave for another job than Oklahoma was going to let him go. It seemed unlikely the way they finished down the stretch, kind of reading between the lines, just talking to people around the athletic department, just kind of getting a vibe feel. And that's the way it ended up going. Roger Denny made the announcement himself, and he's made the media rounds since then that they're keeping Porter Moser. No one thought this, you know, a couple months ago. I mean, it seemed like it was inevitable, right? That change was coming and that Oklahoma was going to be looking for a new head coach this year. They finished great down the stretch, first team out again, and Porter Moser is going to be back for a sixth season. I can really go either way on this. I totally understand why fans want to change, why there's some fans that are upset. I also do honestly get where Roger Denny's coming from, and he's been very open about his reasoning and believing that putting more effort into the program around Porter is the better move. Is that going to prove to be the better move? Time will tell. Obviously, time will tell on that. But what do you make of all of it with Roger Denny choosing to stick with Porter Moser another season? They're going to run this back again. And like I said before, if it works out, great. If it doesn't, it's going to be really toxic next year because the fan base is largely out on Porter, right? I mean, let's call it like it is. His approval rating is not very high because they just missed the tournament again for the fourth time in 5 years, and they're going to roll with him again for a sixth season. Were you surprised? And just your thoughts in general on Porter Moser getting another crack at it, theoretically with more support behind him. At least that's what's being said.
I wasn't surprised. Like we discussed on Friday, we both probably would have been pretty shocked if, you know, they'd pulled the trigger and let Porter Moser go after the way the team finished on the stretch. I think the thing that probably surprised me at least a little bit, when Roger Denny spoke with, you know, our friend Colton Sully over at the Oklahoman, he told him that, you know, he made this decision Wednesday before they even took the court in Nashville.
Yeah.
So like whatever happened in Nashville was not going to have any sway or impact on Porter Moser's future. So I found that to be pretty interesting. But like you have to think of it. It's like Roger Denny has been in this job for now a month and a day. He's seen Porter Moser win some good games during that stretch. Yeah. Like he obviously like he wasn't around during that 9-game skid. So like you know, he wants to give Porter Moser a fair shot. And I think, like, from, you know, you look and you take stock of the program as a whole, and you look at some of the product that, you know, he's seen over the last month and what Porter Moser could do with, you know, obviously a solid transfer haul. Like we discussed, it was the number 11 transfer class in the country last season, despite Oklahoma being toward the bottom of the SEC in NIL funding. You know, you get a couple guys back healthy like Dayton and Jadon that really kind of help get them out of that rut. And you think that, you know, like John Calipari said, coaches win games, but administrators win championships. Mm-hmm. Like, programs need to invest around a coach to give him what he needs to succeed. And, you know, Porter Moser's been, you know, essentially coaching with one hand behind his back in a sense. So look, I think it makes sense, instead of paying the 5.7 or whatever it is, 5.7 million or whatever it is for a buyout, and then having to hire a new staff and you know, reinvest in the roster again, to give Porter Moser a make or break year, which I feel like this upcoming season will undoubtedly be. You know, he's got 2 years left on his contract. It's a little bit easier to swallow that buyout a year from now if things, you know, go sideways. But, you know, give Porter Moser a chance with the resources around him, whether that's NIL funding, whether that's, you know, other investment within the program. You know, I think he mentioned, investment in the coaching staff and getting everything else where it needs to be, and see what he can do. Because, you know, as much as, you know, there's been some fan apathy, you know, Porter Moser has, you know, respect of a lot of people. Like you mentioned, you know, John Calipari, you know, went to bat for him, called him a championship coach, and, you know, said he's been in touch with him throughout this season, you know, during that losing streak to encourage him, and, you know, after the losing streak to really praise him for what he called his best coaching job ever, being able to turn it around when things weren't going well. Mm-hmm. So I'm really curious to see, A, what that investment looks like from the administration side, and B, what Porter Moser can do with that. Now, I think obviously priority number one is you need to retain Darion Reed and Xavier Brown. Yeah. And I think you try to bring back Dayton Forsyth, obviously. I don't know if he's going to be a starting level guard for you, but I like him as a piece off the bench when he's healthy. We'll see what happens with a guy like Jeff Wonko, you know, who they're pretty confident could get another year, and what he looks like a year removed from the year after the Achilles tear. But I'm curious to see what this roster looks like when everything settles after the transfer portal. But, you know, priority number one, again, has to be retaining, you know, those pieces like Darion and Xavier, because you can't just hit, you know, reset and have a completely new team and expect the results to be vastly different.
Yeah, no, we've become like numb to it, and that they just have a new team every year. And so I agree. Like, can you have some continuity? Because if you could have Reed and X, that's at least two starters that you can kind of grow with. Like I said, Dayton's been around a couple of years, maybe a Kuala Talk, if you could find a way to get him back, you know, his minutes were very hit or miss, you know, obviously. Kai Rogers, not the freshman season we were hoping for. Can he come back for another year and maybe take a step? Like, these are the questions that I don't know the answer to that are going to have to figure out. And so it's going to be a very interesting offseason, you know, to see if Roger Denny can follow through on putting more resources around Porter and trying to build up that way. And look, we said it throughout February and certainly into March, like, this was going to be a big decision for Roger either way, right? I mean, however, it was going to be scrutinized either way. And either way, it was going to be under the microscope going into next year. And so next season, if they are able to put together a better roster on Porter and they have the best season yet and they make the tournament comfortably and maybe they win a game or two, it'll look great. But if they have the same season, it'll be, like I said before, like a very toxic situation. Like, we heard some light fire Moser chants this season. I think that would be really loud this year, next year, if they get off to, certainly if they get off to a bad start, but especially if they get into January and they're losing the way we're used to seeing them lose and it's sliding and they're on the bubble again, like, fans are not going to put up with that again. Like, they're not. It's going to be ugly. It will be. So if it works, it'll be great. If it doesn't, it won't. Hand up. I've said it many times. I like Porter. I think he's a good coach. He's a good guy. He's easy to deal with for us. Like, I'm not wishing bad on him by any means. And I do think part of the equation is that there's not really an obvious replacement. There's not a home run hire sitting out there. Josh Schertz would be great. he signed an extension to stay at St. Louis. Like, it's, and I don't know if they would have got him anyway. I mean, like, it's not some awesome market this year, at least on paper. You never know who could pop up and be great. But, you know, there wasn't some slam dunk out there to go get. And so I do get the argument of, like, let's build it around. Let's try to make this thing better. Give him at least middle of the pack resources and then see if that looks different. It's going to be interesting. It's going to be really interesting, to say the least.
And I do think, like, one of the things that, you know, Roger Denny has said is, you know, you look at, you know, success compared to expectations compared and relative to resources. And when you're talking about a team that was, you know, what, 14th, 15th, 16th in the SEC in NIL funding to, you know, finish 11th and then to make a little bit of noise in Nashville, like, in some sense, that is exceeding expectations given what you're working with. I think just the real disappointment for these fans is that 9-game losing streak. Like, if that was just, like, broken up in some sense, and, you know, they finish 8-10 or you know, 9-9 even in SEC play, I think the narrative is a little bit different and the feelings are a little bit different about where things stand with Porter Moser. But I also do think there is a segment of the fan base that sees what he did over those last 5 weeks and are like, okay, like, let's give him what he needs and see if he can, you know, cook with it.
For sure. Any quick thoughts before we move on about not playing the NIT? Do you care? I mean, 2 years ago, they decided not to. I wasn't really sure the way it would go this time. It's a little different scenario than 2 years ago. Yeah. They obviously elected not to again. Now, when you're the first team out, you get to host NIT games if you want them. Again, they did it in 22. They did not in 24. They elect to not again. Do you care? I mean, I think I've always been a little surprised at how much fans seem to get mad. They got mad. I mean, 2 years ago, they were definitely upset. They were upset again that they turned it down. Purely selfishly for me, I don't really have a lot of interest in covering the NIT. I'll be totally honest, just transparent there. Where are you at with that? Does that bother you if you're an Oklahoma fan, you think?
I understand it from both sides. Like, yeah, what bothers me more than anything is just kind of the luster that has kind of fallen off the NIT. Like, it used to be
– it makes a tournament now.
Yeah, yeah. Right. Like, it used to be a fun consolation prize for the teams that didn't make the NCAA tournament. And now it's just like so many years you're seeing teams just turn it down. I was a little bit surprised that they turned it down. Like you said, it's a different situation than 2 years ago when, you know, 2 years ago you had a lot of guys that were getting ready to hit the portal. Whereas this roster, you know, you have several seniors, you know, Mo Agee, Nigel Pack, Tay Davis, Jadon Jones, and you're hoping to retain guys like X and like Darion. And, you know, I thought it would be fun to see them, you know, get a couple more opportunities to go out there, especially for a guy like Nigel Pack. Just like, yeah, man, take those couple extra games and just like try to make a run up that, you know, career 3-point leaderboard.
Yeah.
Again, like he finishes his career number 19. You know, I think with two or three games even, he could have gotten, you know, on the cusp of the top 10, which pretty neat achievement.
Sure.
You know, given it's a 6-year career, but still, like, they don't take that away from you. I think that would have been fun. And, like, for guys like X and Darion in particular, it's like, X had a pretty rough game in that Arkansas loss, you know, especially shooting wise. Like, he, you know, he had 8 assists, you know, led the team with 7 rebounds. Like, overall, you know, he contributed and like, didn't let the missed shots really impact him. But, you know, it would have been nice to see him be able to finish off the season on a little bit of a high note. And I would have liked to see what, you know, Darion Reed could have done trying to build off of, you know, his last several games. Because he was – these last few weeks, like, he's looked a lot more like that, you know, former McDonald's All-American that people thought could maybe be a one-and-done prospect. So if he can build on that, not just if it would have been in the NIT, that would have been cool to see, but – if he can sustain that momentum through the offseason, I think that would be huge for Oklahoma, assuming they're able to bring him back.
Yeah, for sure. I honestly just wasn't sure. I got asked, do you think they'll play in? And I didn't know. I was like, I kind of could see it either way. For those who might wonder, like, maybe they just didn't want to host the games. You don't have to. I mean, you could be in the NIT, even though they would have been a one seed. You can decline to host and go on the ropes. I know, like, the women's team's hosting this week. We're about to talk about them in a second. You could say, like, logistically, even though they did make it work in 22, like, maybe they just don't want to deal with that. OU, the school, doesn't want to. Team could still go on the road. That happens every once in a while where a team accepts the bid but as they don't want to host. They just go on the road to wherever. So they really just decided not to play. And I assume we'll talk to Porter at some point, maybe not until next year. I don't know. But he'll be open about it. I mean, if we ask, he'll be open about what the reasoning was. Because, you know, 2 years ago, we talked to Porter right after the selection day. I think it was like literally the Monday after. And he basically said, like, the guys were gutted and we had to make a decision. And we just were like, weren't in a mental state to do it. Yeah. This year, I wonder is it the same thing? Like, they were just not in a headspace, didn't want to, or was it? I mean, that's the thing. It's so hard. You have to get the portal. Can you set you behind? If you want to run on this thing, it can set you behind the portal a little bit. It's just, I don't know. It's a tricky spot with the way the calendar falls. It's kind of like bowl games in football. Like, it's kind of a little bit of the calendar's kind of busted a little bit. So, yeah. I don't know.
I think there's several factors. Like, I think like the disappointment factor is certainly one of them. And also like for some of these guys, you know, again, it would have been cool for the seniors, I think in some regard, but yeah. You know, it was a team decision from what I was told. And I think like, and look, I haven't heard this directly, but you know, it takes a lot of, you know, effort mentally and physically to do what Oklahoma did to turn things around over these last 5 weeks. These guys are probably exhausted right now too, man. And yeah. Like to be exhausted and then, it's, you know, to have a little bit of the gut punch of being the first team out again, like I understand being like, no, man, let's just, you know, hang our hats on what we did during these last 5 weeks and, you know, call it a season. But the other thing that, you know, worth considering is a lot of teams that host in the NIT wind up losing money in the postseason. It's not a cash cow for them. Like it costs money to host these events. And like, if you're not selling out the arena for every game, like it's really not worth it to host in some senses. So I get it from a fiscal standpoint too.
Yeah, for sure. So season is over. I'd like to watch Nigel Pack at least one more time. He was, mm-hmm. He was a joy to watch this season, but comes to an end. So that's it for OU. And obviously we'll continue to talk about them obviously. And the portal gets going and everything, but yeah, season comes to an end. Good run in Nashville. Unbelievable. They got back into it. First team out again is almost cruel. They did just enough to get back into the first team out, first four out. It's kind of unreal, but Porter Moser will be back next year. Going to be a very interesting offseason, obviously, for that team. And we'll continue to discuss them as we get deeper into the offseason. I do want to make sure to bring up the women a little bit as well. They got their draw obviously yesterday. Again, kind of like, you know, they haven't played forever, right? The NCAA tournament was a long time ago. They had the week off. Now they get the bracket. It's what we thought. They're a four seed. They're at home. They're going to play Idaho in the first round. If it goes to seed, they play Michigan State. They're the five seed on Sunday would be. And then if it goes in line, they would play the one seed in the region is South Carolina, who they did beat, and it would be in Sacramento. I know they're hoping for Fort Worth, but they get Sacramento. Tom, it seems to me, relatively speaking, not that bad. I mean, you didn't have to deal with UCLA or UConn, which I think was the main thing you wanted to avoid. You got the top four. You have beaten South Carolina this year. So, I mean, beating them again is not going to be an easy task by any means, but you at least know you can do it. I think all things considered, not the worst draw in the world for Jenny Bronchek and women's hoops. We'll see what they do this week and what kind of, you know, home atmosphere the fans can give them at the Lenoble Center this weekend. But not that bad of a draw, I feel like, all things considered.
Yeah, of course you need to, you know, take care of business at home, and they'll be favored in those games as the host team. You know, I think there's a trade-off between, you know, we talked about it last week. It's like, you know, do they want to get to Fort Worth in the second weekend or maybe have a little bit more of a favorable draw out in Sacramento? So I think it's interesting. Like, I think you'd love to be able to play in Fort Worth and be able to have some fans travel for that. Whereas Sacramento's a little bit tougher trip. But again, you mentioned you get a South Carolina team that you have beat and you know that you can go toe to toe with. Mm-hmm. So I think, again, just from a mental aspect, that I think that is a, you know, pretty big advantage for them in that regard. But again, they still have a lot of work to do just to get there. So obviously postseason, take it a day at a time, but I think it's a somewhat favorable draw for them.
Yeah, not bad. And the worst part is that the game on Friday, 9 p.m. tip. What on earth? That happened last time too, or not last time. One of the times, maybe Jenny's first year. Remember they had a really late, I don't I don't know why Oklahoma gets treated like a West Coast team a lot of times. 9 p.m. at the Noble Center on Friday night against Idaho. That is something. But it'll be fun. It'll be fun to see them get back in the tournament and see them go on a little bit of a run here. And we'll have coverage over on the website as well as obviously post-game press conferences can be always found on the YouTube channel throughout their run here over the next, you know, potentially a few weeks. We'll see what they do for Jenny B and Women's Hoops. The Sooners Illustrated podcast will be back after this short break. Let's wrap up our spring primer series. Got a few more here. We'll run through them. We'll kind of rapid fire these last few. Three more on the defensive side. Spring ball starts next week. First practice is next Wednesday. Next Monday in the show, Tom and I will set the table for spring ball, kind of like our big storylines to watch over the next month of spring practice. Let's hear our last few primers, though, starting with linebackers, Tom. Position that, you know, you love the top, Kip Lewis back, which was a huge win. I think we kind of went through all last season thinking that he would not be back, was kind of just the assumption. But he is back, you know, obviously going to be a huge part of this thing. They bring in Cole Sullivan from the portal. Owen Heineke, not going to be back, we don't think. It seems like that's probably not the way that's going. But and then a lot of young guys, right? I mean, it's a lot of young guys. You had Samuel Masigo and Kendall Daniels and Kobe McKenzie are all on the way out, whether through the portal or in the NFL, like Kendall Daniels. And it's a bunch of young guys, a bunch of unproven talent, a lot of exciting talent, but unproven talent. Where are you kind of at with this linebacker room as we get ready to get into spring? And, you know, again, you love that first group, Kip and Cole Sullivan. That looks awesome. But after that, you're going to need some guys to step up.
Yeah, it's the biggest question mark on this defense right now, which is kind of funny considering – you know, you have three veteran linebacker coaches who have been defensive coordinators in, you know, Brent Venables, Nate Dreiling, and Wes Goodwin over there handling the Cheetahs. So, like, getting Kip Lewis back is huge. Like, that was one of the biggest wins of the offseason for Oklahoma, sure. Just in terms of retention. And landing Cole Sullivan, a guy that, you know, Brent Venables has said reminds him a little bit of a younger Danny Stutzman. Kind of where he was early in his development at Oklahoma. So if you can get even close to Danny's production and development out of Cole Sullivan, you feel really good. And then Reggie Powers taking over at the Cheetah position. Think he has a really high ceiling there. The question really for Oklahoma is, you know, what does that second line look like? You know, I know they like a James Nesta. I know they like Taylor Heim. You know, you have younger guys like a Marcus James in there too. So I'm curious to see what that second line looks like, because go back to what Brent Venables said when we spoke to him, you know, a week ago. It's like last year the defense was so good because the ones were here and the twos were right here. There wasn't much fall off. There's going to be a wider gap this time around, and they need to find a way to close that over this offseason. So what does that look like at linebacker, I think, is going to be the real intriguing part of this offseason for Oklahoma throughout the spring and fall camp.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, Cole Sullivan is someone who I'm as excited to see in person as anyone on the team in terms of what they added, you know, through the portal or of the freshman class. I think that combination with Kip could be really fun. But yeah, I mean, you're going to need between Nesta, Marcus James, Taylor Heim, maybe even a freshman gives you something, whether it's a Christian Moore or a Bathurst or Jandro or someone, you know, someone step up and give you something. Jacob Curry's gotten a lot of buzz through winter workouts. Could he give you something, whether it's at the Cheetah spot or something? You're going to need some guys to step up, which has happened before, right? And so, you know, you say it's the biggest question mark. I think that should provide some comfort in that this is a position that if there's one position that you feel like Brent Venables and this staff can kind of get maybe more out of than what it looks like on paper, that would probably be the one as linebacker. Yeah. So interesting group. I'm excited to see some of these guys, and they're going to need someone to step up. When that first two deep comes out in fall, right now on March 16th, you could talk me into a lot of guys being in that next line after Kip and Sullivan right now.
Yeah. You know, you mentioned having confidence in what Brent Venables can do there. You know, I think when he made his first call to Cole Sullivan, you know, he referred to himself as the linebacker doctor. It's like, who do you go see when you're sick? Like, you don't just go see some random doctor. You see a specialist. And it's hard to argue with what he's done, obviously, over his career, coaching three Butkus Award winners, five more finalists. Obviously, Danny Stutzman, the most recent finalist among that group. So that got Cole Sullivan excited. And I have a story up on the site right now about kind of, you know, how Oklahoma was able to lure him away from Michigan because he was considering returning there, and just the effort that Brent Venables and his quote-unquote aura, as Cole Sullivan described it, kind of made the difference there. So go check that out on the site. But yeah, lots of intrigue at linebacker this offseason.
No doubt about it. Let's shift into the secondary to wrap up. We got a couple positions there, obviously, with cornerbacks first. A lot of returning production here. In particular, you know, your top two guys being Eli Bowen and Cortland Guillory, who was one of the breakout stars last year as a true freshman. You do have, you know, Gentry Williams moves on through the portal. You know, Tom, where are you at with this cornerback room in terms of just, I mean, you have to love the Bowen-Guillory combo. That's really exciting. You know, last year when we were doing this, we were kind of in the same spot getting spring ball. We were kind of talking about, man, kind of surprised they didn't do more in the portal, right? They were banking on their young talent, and it paid off, right? The young talent delivered. Obviously, Jacoby Johnson played a big role last year as well. It feels like on paper this is a really good group. New management, obviously with Lamar Morgan coming in, replacing Jay Valai. But it feels like this should be one of the strengths of the defense, right? I mean, you're talking about Eli Bowen as one of your best players, period. And Cortland Greer was a breakout star as a freshman. Jacoby Johnson, you know, takes another step. You made a couple of portal additions. Is there more than one? Prince Igioma. Is there another one?
Dakota Fields.
Yeah, I knew I was blanking on one. I should have had the list in front of me. So some younger talent there. Dakota Fields, a younger guy. But it's a room that, for the most part, you're going to have a lot of returning production at, which is, I think, pretty exciting.
Yeah, in my opinion, I think that this is the strongest group on the defense entering the spring. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I still think the defensive line is going to end up being really good, but I think just given what you're returning, kind of that top three of Eli Bowen, Cortland Guillory, and Jacoby Johnson, who, you know, they consider a co-starter right now, with the way he finished last season and really came into his own after, you know, being able to just focus singularly on playing cornerback and not moonlighting as a wide receiver. I think there's a case that this is the strongest position on the defense heading into 2026. So I'm curious to see what that looks like with Lamar Morgan at the helm. You know, he's a guy that obviously came from Michigan, has coached in the SEC at Vanderbilt, you know, has been a defensive coordinator before too. So we'll see what he can do with that group. But you feel really good about Eli Bowen. You feel really good about Cortland Guillory. You feel really good about Jacoby Johnson. I'm curious to see kind of, you know, who that second backup winds up being, whether that's Dakota Fields, mm-hmm. whether Prince Ijama can kind of factor in there as a guy that comes in from Mississippi Valley State, where, you know, don't see a lot of guys like that come through, but, you know, he's a Texas kid, yeah. You know, grew up with Nigel Smith. So he knows some of those guys too. And then a guy like Jeremiah Newcomb, who I think is also, you know, he's back from shoulder injury, but I think he's also going to factor in at the, you know, that cheetah rotation. So I think there's a lot to be excited about this position group going into spring practice.
I agree. You know, a guy like Tristan Haynes is very interesting too. You know, it was a guy mm-hmm. that was very highly tied up high school, local guy. We didn't really see him last year, you know, year two for him. Can he break in there somewhere? Interesting spring camp, but there's a lot of names at corner. And like you said, the returning production at the top as good as any position on the entire team. So very exciting stuff there, and a good place to kind of start if you're Lamar Morgan. You know, you're not coming in trying to shape a brand new room by any means. You're not restarting, you know, like Jason Witten is doing per se, like tight end, where it's we're overhauling this thing. Like, you're coming into a position that's been playing well. You have returning talent. You're in a good spot. So, yeah, I agree. A lot to like at cornerback heading into spring. One more on the way out here. Safeties. With Brandon Hall, who's done an excellent job, obviously, at his position for a number of years now. Kind of a similar conversation here as the linebackers, it feels like. I mean, you Peyton Bowen is awesome. You like Michael Boganowski to take a step. You lose Robert Spears Jennings. Obviously, he moves on. But you love that top two. Amarion Robinson played some pretty decent snaps for you down the stretch last year. But then that's kind of it. Like, you're kind of wondering where you're going to turn after that top line. And if you did have an injury or two, what would that look like? Obviously, you do have Reggie Powers, who can slide back if need be. I know you love him at that cheetah spot, and so you probably don't want to do that, but, you know, he could, I'm sure, if you needed him to. Where are you up to safeties, and is there a name or two in particular after that top line that stands out to you? Because it does feel like kind of like linebacker, like the top line is great, but there's some unproven talent there behind, and you're going to need some younger dudes probably to step up a little bit for you.
Yeah, I mean, it's a smaller group, just kind of by design. Not a lot of bodies in that room. But I think, you know, you're hoping that that top three of Peyton Bowen, Michael Boganowski, and Omarion Robinson mm-hmm. can be like your core rotation there. And again, I think we might see Reggie Power shift back there some as needed. But you feel really good about those top three, certainly with Peyton Bowen coming back. I'm curious to see what, you know, Michael Boganowski can do in a larger role.
Yeah.
You know, Omarion Robinson, you know, is a guy that, you know, Brent Venables has been crazy about since he got on campus a year ago. Just a real natural instinctual safety. So what does year two look like for him? Because he's obviously going to need to play a bigger role, but this is kind of where, you know, losing a guy like Jaden Hardy in the portal kind of hurts you a little bit.
Yeah.
You would have loved to have him back and, you know, have that, you know, two deep there with him and Michael Boganowski and Peyton Bowen or Omarion Robinson. You would have felt great about that position. But right now, I think you're kind of banking on that three-man rotation and trying to see who rises to the top to, you know, make a push for some playing time in that number four spot.
Yeah, Hardy kind of ended up the odd man out in that class with him and Boganowski and Powers, that trio that was so exciting. And he did some good things last year. Obviously the strip in Tuscaloosa will kind of live forever a little bit, and he moves on. And I'm just interested in, like, a guy like a Markel Ford comes in, true freshman. Like, he certainly looked, I mean, just looking at him, looked pretty impressive at the media day thing last week. So I don't know, it's an interesting room. I, you know, kind of like linebacker though, you trust what they've done and the track record, and Brandon Halston does such a great job, and top line is in great shape. So a lot to be excited about. Peyton Bowen feels like he's probably primed to have a all SEC type of year. I mean, just been that steady climb for him. Mm-hmm. And he's really fun to watch. Just a really good player. And so as long as he can be healthy, you fear he's going to be really good for you on a week in, week out basis. So feels good though. Defensively overall, I mean, feels like they're in a good play. I mean, I don't know if it's going to be as good. They were really good last year, but it shouldn't miss much of a beat, you know, I don't think. And it's going to just come down to, is the depth as good? The depth was really good last year. It's going to be hard to maintain that in the portal era, but doesn't feel like you should expect much of a drop-off defensively this year. I think they should be really good again. I mean, again, some injuries and maybe some of these younger guys don't pan out like you're hoping for, and it could maybe have some leaks somewhere, but overall on paper feels like should be a pretty darn good defense again, right?
Yeah, I think it's going to be hard to be as good as they were in some areas last year, but right. You know, this should still be like a borderline top 10 defense once they get rolling. And obviously, you know, Brent Venables getting his fingerprints all over it. Yeah, you feel pretty confident about that.
No doubt. Let's do some diamond sports here on the way out before we get
special teams.
You can go ahead if you got some special.
I mean, they're bringing back 100% of their production.
Yeah,
I mean, that's essentially the big question is like, what's the return game going to look like? Because Isaiah Satania was, you know, one of the better punt returners in the country last year, and then they just did not return kickoffs last year. Curious to see kind of if that approach changes. Kind of helping the field position game there. But other than that, you bring back the Lou Rosa Award winner, you bring back an all-SEC punter, and you feel good about it.
No doubt. I mean, getting Tate Sandell back is a little, you know, we made big of it at the time, but it has gotten a little overlooked in terms of, like, that was a big deal to get him back. Obviously, he wins the Lou Groves. He was awesome. And, that's a big deal to have him back this year, certainly. And, Grayson Miller back doesn't hurt either. All-SEC punter, like you said, so. A lot to be excited about.
Anderson, all SEC long snapper.
That's right. Doug Deacon in good shape right now at special teams. So lots of on that third side of the ball. Next week they get it going finally. And like I said, Monday we'll kind of set the table for spring ball, kind of our final thoughts of things we're going to be watching for. And then Wednesday is the first practice. We don't really know what that looks like yet in terms of, like, will we be allowed to be out there? All that will be communicated later. But obviously in some form or fashion, spring ball content is going to be coming your way next week. So a lot to be excited about is we've made it. Spring ball right on the corner, spring game a month from Wednesday on the April 18th. So getting closer to spring ball starting next week. Let's do some diamond sports before we get out of here. SEC play started this week. We'll start with softball. Swept Auburn. You were plugged into these games over as soon as Illustrated. I mean, we were excited to get them into SEC play. Auburn's not the greatest. I mean, they're not going to be an Omaha contender like they'll face in some of these other SEC series, but obviously they're better than what they've been playing. Oklahoma kind of dominated them again. They did fall behind a couple times. I mean, you can do it better than me. I mean, you were plugged into these games, but at the end of the day, it's a sweep. They dominated on Sunday. Kendall Wells is insane. Go ahead, whatever direction you want to take it as a softball, just kind of handled their business at home against Auburn.
Yeah, I mean, they rallied from what was it, Saturday's game. They were down 4 runs.
And, that's right.
Yeah. Rallied back to win that one. I think they scored, what was it, 7 straight to come back. I forgot the final scores, but it's been a busy few days with softball and baseball and basketball and everything going on. But, you know, they rallied back in that one. And then Sunday, you know, just exploded for 9 runs in the 4th inning to pull away for a run rule win. Kendall Wells, 2 home runs in that one. She's up to 21 on the season now. She's with 25 regular season games left. She's 9 home runs shy of tying the NCAA record for home runs by a freshman, which is, you know, a 3-way tie with, you know, Lauren Chamberlain, Jocelyn Alo, and I forgot the Hawaii player that did it in 2010. But to be on pace for that, where she's hitting, you know, basically 1 home run every 1.5 games, I think she'll probably safely hit that record as long as she stays healthy. But she's been unreal. I think another just big piece for them this weekend is what Alyssa Parker's been able to do in the circle. You know, she had some really strong performances out of the bullpen for them, which they've needed because, you know, like we discussed, the starting pitching has not been excellent at times. You know, Auburn even got to Audrey Lowry a couple times this weekend, but she still pitched pretty well for the most part. But yeah, I mean, look, first time they got to see an SEC team and they handled their business, went 3-0, wasn't always pretty. I think Auburn wound up hitting more home runs than them for the series, but they still, you know, were able to finish off a sweep with a run rule win at home.
Yeah, good stuff. I mean, they're playing well, obviously. And yeah, Kendall Wells, the numbers are honestly hard to kind of absorb. What she's done so far, the start has just been insane. You feel like she's going to homer every time she's up. I mean, she really has that kind of ability right now. So a great start to their SEC slate. I was trying to get the schedule pulled up here. So they got Memphis on Wednesday at Memphis, and they go to Ole Miss next weekend. So out on the road for the first time in SEC play. They'll continue to keep it rolling, and we'll obviously keep plugged in over at Sooners Illustrated.
Wrap homecoming for Miley Buchenio.
That's right. That's right. A return trip. Wonder, you know, hostile crowd maybe. Who knows? I don't know the vibes there. But yeah, we'll keep an eye on that this next weekend. Wrap up some baseball. We get out of here. Great series win for them. They beat Texas A&M at home. Got 2 out of 3. You know, it was going to be a big test going in. I mean, Texas A&M, really good offensive team. And so that was kind of the question was the starting pitch for OU, which has been so good against Texas A&M's offense, which is really good as well. And, you know, they got hit around a little bit. A&M scored runs this weekend. And now it was a crazy weekend for baseball because it was so windy in Oklahoma. If you weren't in Oklahoma this weekend, you know, I don't know if you can fully appreciate it. It was insane. It was insane, especially on Sunday. I mean, just outrageous. And so it was not exactly conducive to pitching and defense. All 3 of these games were really high scoring. It was a very entertaining series, 3 very competitive games. And Oklahoma wins on Friday. They win on Sunday, dropped the middle game. The bullpen has been really good. This is, in my opinion, and we got to see how it plays out, right? We're early here still, relatively speaking, but got to be one of the deeper bullpens that Skip Johnson's had. Like, just the number of guys who can come in and throw 95 and get big outs, that's really encouraging. And this weekend, even though the starting pitching wasn't very good, frankly, this weekend, the bullpen was awesome. And the offense was really good. I mean, Brendan Brock, he was the SEC Player of the Week today. He has been just phenomenal. So good. Camden Johnson's been good. Jackson Wills is having his best year so far. Dayton LaChance has been great. And so offensively, they're really good. They're hitting for power. They're stealing bases like they usually do. And so, yeah, I mean, great to get a series win. It's a little, I don't even know the right way to put it, like reality check, wake up call, like a little cold water on the rotation because it did go so poorly this weekend and it had been so good. Not smashing the panic button again. Bad conditions, good offensive team. You know, give it a little time. We'll see what they do, you know, moving forward. But really good stuff to go get 2 out of 3. And the scene on Friday, if you didn't see it, was absolutely mayhem. Jackson Wills gets ejected for spiking his bat when he homered to tie the game, which was crazy. Guys do way more than that all the time and don't get ejected. And he somehow got ejected. Then Michael Early, the A&M coach, threw it back at the OU dugout. The coach were yelling at each other. It was chaos.
Choice words.
It was crazy. It was absolutely nuts. So Jax Willis was suspended for Saturday. It's an automatic one-game suspension. It's the one game they lost. And, you know, Jackson's a huge part of the team. I mean, he's a cleanup hitter. He's a great shortstop. So that sucked to lose him for Saturday. But he came back on Sunday. He was really good again, and they won on Sunday. So great way to start. Really rough road trip coming up. They go 7 straight games on the road at LSU this weekend and then at Texas. That's a really tough back-to-back of road weekends. Now, LSU is unranked. They were number 13. They had an awful week where they lost just some crazy midweek losses, and they lost a series to Vanderbilt. So they're unranked, but that's still a tough series going out there to Baton Rouge. And then Texas is number 2 right now. I mean, the Longhorns are really good. And so, yeah, not going to be easy. They're not undefeated anymore, but they're still really good. And so, yeah, going down there, back-to-back weekends. If you could – the way it kind of looks like these 6 games and you loop in, they have Southeastern Louisiana on Tuesday. So if you loop in that, if you can get 4 of 7 in these 7 games, split the 2 SEC series, like get 3 of 6, that would probably be a win. But even if you lose both series, it's not a huge deal. Don't get swept. You have to avoid sweeps. You can't have that. But I think a lot to be encouraged by. I mean, you get off to a good start. You have to protect home field. That's a must, which they did, you know, and pretty good start. Good series win for Skip and the boys. They're up to number 8 in the poll now. So just keep climbing. So, yeah, good stuff to start the year. Nice to see them win some competitive games. All 3 games were sold out. So great crowds and just, pretty encouraging and good start for OU baseball, and we'll see where they go from here. Long way to go, but a good start. All right, I think that's it. We had a lot to get through. I think we hit through it relatively efficient manner. We'll be back next Monday, Tom and I, where, yeah, we'll set the table for spring ball. Like I said, we'll wrap it the weekend, so the Diamond Sports, of course, as well. Maybe hit some hoop stuff. We'll talk about women's hoops, of course, and maybe men's if there's something to get into there with the early parts of the off season. And as far as this week, I don't know if Colin and I are going to do a show on Wednesday. We'll let you keep an eye out for it. I'm not sure. I'll have to get with him. I haven't talked to him about that yet. So maybe, but keep an eye out for it. If not, we'll see you next week with Tom and I. Enjoy the tournament. It's one of the greatest weeks of the year. So enjoy it. Stress-free. And that's the one plus. No OU game. Don't stress about it. Worry about it. But, yeah, great time of year. And, Tom, we'll see you next week. Enjoy the tournament, my friend.
You too.
Will do. All right, that's it. Be back next week, next time, right here, as always, Sooners Illustrated.